أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطاهرين. Dear brothers and sisters, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله and welcome to a new session in our course from Ali عليه السلام to Al-Mahdi عليه السلام. This is the second part of the course where we're discussing about Imam Mahdi عليه السلام and it's the 16th session of the course, so we've gone quite ahead. So, in today's session, after having talked about the wisdom of Ghaiba and the actual fact that Imam Mahdi is alive, he's been born and he's in Ghaiba, and we touched a little bit about what it means to be in Ghaiba, but very briefly, and we talked about why Imam went into Ghaiba. In today's session, inshallah, we want to discuss how we can reconcile this whole concept of the Imam of the time being hidden from us and his role as a guide and the other roles, the five roles that we mentioned in previous session. So for this interesting discussion, we have with us Sheikh Ali. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikhana.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Thank you very much again for joining us. So let's get started.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ahli bayti at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajam. So today's discussion is going to be about the reconciling, as you mentioned, between the role that we have of the imams and the period of ghaiba. How can we reconcile with this? If it's all right, I'll start with two brief points that will help us throughout the session, inshallah. One point that we should begin with and have in our minds about the time of ghaiba, which we'll probably hear again in the coming sessions, and it's a really important point, is that when it comes to ghaiba, you'll find sometimes this misconception of ghaiba in two extremes, and both of them incorrect. One extreme is that ghaiba is, so I guess the title of today's show sort of fits this narrative. Ghaiba is just such a mess, it messes up everything to do with imamah, there's no way it's correct, we have to throw it away. That's one.
Throw it away in what sense? Not believe.
Means it doesn't exist. Okay. Means it doesn't exist, and we have to look for an alternate narrative.
But that would clearly be against.
So this is what we're going to be speaking against very strongly today. Okay. And show that. And at the previous sessions also spoke about it. The coming sessions will also speak about this, because ghaiba is a necessary part of faith, and in the sense that it's an obvious and very clear.
I mean,
part
the Prophet has talked about it. The imams have talked about it. I mean, it's something that's there in our traditions very clearly.
Yeah. But this narrative, sometimes you find it, even though a person may not understand what it leads to, and say that the results of this means that I have to reject ghaiba. But they see ghaiba as a time where nothing can happen, everything's just a mess.
You know, I guess it's also mentality. Something hard, right? To be in that time of ghaiba, it's a bit hard to connect. Really, there's an imam right now and you can't see him. It's sort of that belief in the ghaib that Allah is saying that, you know, if you're a believer, you believe in the ghaib. It's something hard,
it's tough,
to be fair.
Yeah. It's tough. And on the other extreme, some people give such a narrative of ghaiba that it's as if the imam is here with us. There's nothing different. It's true the imam's not with us physically. Mm. As in physically, we'll explain what it means. He's with us physically. It's true that we can't recognize him and we don't have the chance to meet him at a wide scale and openly. But these people make it seem like ghaiba is as if nothing's happened. The result of this is that we're not even waiting for anything.
Mm. Okay, both, so you mean to that extreme. It's so bad that, you know, there's nothing to wait. Things are as normal as they could
this
be.
This is exactly what needed to happen. This perfect is exactly what we want. Mm. What we want. The right way to understand this whole picture is to see that ghaiba is something that is, if you want to use a sort of a metaphor, it's a bone in the throat, it's a thorn in the throat, but a person can still breathe.
Okay.
Right? It's a tough time for the Shias. It's not going to be like the time when the imams were present.
I mean, it's not the ideal situation.
It's not the ideal situation.
But it's a reality that we need to...
But it's a situation that everything that Allah, His wisdom, necessitated for everything to come, the imams to come, the guidance to happen in stages, the Quran to be revealed, the Prophet to be in the way he is with his characteristics, the imams, all of this, ghaiba doesn't go against any of that. So this is the puzzle we want to draw today. I just want to set it out over here so that right from the start, our mind doesn't incline to either of these. Because in today's session, when we're speaking about how the imam that's ghaib can benefit us and how the imam that's ghaib can connect with us and we can benefit from him, we shouldn't be looking for a narrative where it's just like it's absolutely normal and we're happy and there's no need for change and the imam is, it's exactly what we want. That's the wrong narrative to look for. But also you shouldn't lean over the other side and question the intellectual and Quranic and hadithi proofs that we have that show that Allah does guide the people at every time. So this is just a picture that we have to start with.
So it doesn't go against the wisdom of Allah in terms of sending guidance.
On one side.
On one side. On the other side, it doesn't mean like this is the ideal situation that Allah would have wanted in the ideal sense.
And we're
Allah
not...
had another plan, but this is that intermediary thing where things need to unfold themselves for that ideal to happen.
Yeah. It's not... So this state of being between these two creates a state where we're satisfied that Allah is still guiding us, that we have the opportunity. It gives us that much hope. But we're also being pushed to strive harder.
Mm.
And that's intidhar. Now, inshallah, whenever intidhar, I explain more, it's a summary of this feeling. That on one side, we don't feel let go of by Allah. And that's what we're going to prove very strongly today. That Allah hasn't let go of us and said, oh, you guys, you know, just get lost.
Do what you want. Yeah.
Mm. That's not the case. But on the other side, it's not that we're in the best situation. We have to strive to get to somewhere.
Yeah.
Now, when we speak about intidhar in the next section, active intidhar means this.
Yeah.
Inshallah, it'll be opened up. That's one introduction. The second introduction I wanted to start with, we'll spoil the show. It's going to answer the question very quickly, the whole reconciliation.
Okay.
But I'm going to use this as a starter and then we'll go into it deeply.
Mm-hmm.
But this is it's a really nice answer that solves everything right at the start. So if anyone wants to, can I say it? If they want to stop listening to the rest, then they shouldn't. They should listen all the way to see if anything.
No, so this happened with Sheikh Kadhim yesterday. I asked him to sum it up right at the start of the discussion. But that doesn't mean don't continue because all the details come up, all the explanation comes up. So again, you can have the spoiler, but then...
No, but this, you see, let it come. So one really important point is this, that, and this is something that we really have to understand well when it comes to ghibah. And it's essential to have this in our minds when it comes to ghibah, that 260 ghibah sughra begins until 329. 329 ghibah kubra begins, right? If you look at this period by 329, okay, the imam is at an age where a normal person would be expected to live or could live until. So this is the wrong narrative, that the imam lasted until then, as in ghibah kubra went on. Then the ulama started sitting together and saying that, okay, 80, 90, 100, 110, okay, this is getting a bit tight, let's sort something out.
Mm.
It's not the case. Right from the start, from Ghibat Sughra, we have a hadith because, you know, Sheikh Kulaini, it's very interesting. This needs to be all everyone who's listening to this, please write this down again and again. Sheikh Kulaini passed away during Ghibat Sughra. This is such an important statement when it comes to hadith.
Mm.
Sheikh Kulaini passed away in the year 329. Sheikh Saduq's father passed away in the year 329. Means these people didn't even see Ghibat Kubra and they wrote so much in the books about Ghibat.
Mm.
Whereas in 329, the imam would be very naturally expected to live. He's less than 8 years old. Very normal for him to be living. He's 74 at that time. Very normal. 74, the other imams lived until their mid-60s, maybe even later some.
And it's normal. We know people at the time used to live much longer. Yeah.
Much longer. Salman, the other people in history, they live much longer than this. But right from that time, in fact, we have a hadith that I don't want to speak about today. But Sheikh Kulaini in Al-Kafi mentions in one of his hadith that إِنَّ لِصَاحِبِ هَذَا الْأَمْرِ غَيْبَتَانِ That this imam is going to have two ghibah. Whereas Sheikh Kulaini has nothing to do about the ghibah kubra. So this whole theory that the ghibah was, you know, something.
Was something made up just to make up an excuse for what's happening. Yeah.
That's out of the window.
Interesting.
Anyway, put that aside. So one thing that's really important to note is that right from the start of ghibah al-sughra, the people had a lot of questions about ghibah. And this is, I'm going on another side point. I hope I'll be able to cover our topic. I've not even gone into the main stuff yet. This is a really beautiful point to see in history. I'm talking about the 3rd and 4th century, where the ulama were faced with something new for Shias. Ghibah in this meaning. Although I'll go through it. We have different types of ghibah that happened with the imams. But this type of ghibah that the imam was not to be seen by anyone, especially ghibat kubra. This was a new thing for the Shias. Right, that always had the imam to go to and refer to, but the ulama over here didn't take the back seat and say that, oh no, what's going on, what do we do?
They were ready for it.
Right then, you see the top ulama all came up and wrote books about ghibat. Sheikh Tusi wrote a book about ghibat. Sheikh Kamaluddin, Sheikh Saduq wrote a book about ghibat. Sheikh Mufid has written a Q&A on ghibat. So he says, Ba'adul Mukhalifin, they bring up this question, there's an answer.
Mm.
Again, Sayyid Murtada, again, he's got the same. They're both Sheikh Saduq, Sheikh Mufid, Sayyid Murtada at the start of they passed away at the start of the 5th century. Sheikh Tusi, the middle of the 5th century. Nu'mani, he writes a book at that time. All of these ulama write, then everyone who was there steps up and writes a book about it. Mm-hmm. Now, this itself has so many points in it, but let's put this aside. If you think about it, you get the points. I mean, right? I mean, there's a lot in it.
Definitely.
But the imams, it was so clear for the ulama, there was nobody. Anyway,
and these are, they're reporting a hadith from way before that as well.
Exactly, from the
hadith.
From the
go
prophet.
Back from the prophet to the books of the previous ashab.
Kamaluddin says, Sheikh Saduq says, I'm going to narrate a hadith from the prophet, from Imam Ali, from our sixth imam, seventh imam, eighth imam, all about ghibah.
And in fact, in Kamaluddin, he starts by showing that ghibah is not a new thing.
Don't. We're going to come to that.
Okay.
So this is the point that I'm making.
Okay.
Don't spoil. So what I want to say is that this is a sunnah that the ulama stepped up and answered. The example that I want to give is exactly the one that you're going to mention. That Sheikh Saduq, in his prologue to the book, when he wants to start the introduction, there's a beautiful story that Sheikh Saduq has, a beautiful, outstanding story that will solve the question completely. But like I said, we'll go into it into detail. But Sheikh Saduq says, I was in a city and a man comes to me from the Shias and he says that, why don't you write a book to answer the doubts about the 12th Imam? Mm. And Sheikh Saduq says, Baba, you know, Sheikh Saduq is known for having many, many books, hundreds of books. He says, I've written many, many books about the Imam. So he says, no, write one that's a comprehensive book. So he says, I was thinking and I went home and I thought after some time. He said, one day I was thinking about my akhirat. So it's a beautiful story. He said, I was thinking about this. إذ غلبني النوم. I fell asleep. I'm sure you've heard this story. It's beautiful. I'm sure some of us have heard this. But really, it's such a beautiful story. And coming from Sheikh Saduq. Sorry, one more bracket. Last one. Mm-hmm. Sheikh Saduq and his teacher Ibn Walid are known to be the most strict Shia scholars when it comes to separating ghali narrators. Mm.
Yeah.
Ibn Walid, if you want to find, for example, a hadith that is reliable in the sense that it doesn't have ghulu stuff in it, if Ibn Walid, and the good thing for us, alhamdulillah, for those of us who are aware with Rijal, is Ibn Walid's not later in the hadith. For example, sometimes you have Ibn Mahbub later in the hadith, you say, okay, maybe they made up the chain and put his name. But the beauty is that a hadith of Sheikh Saduq, he narrates directly from Muhammad ibn al-Hassan. When he says Muhammad ibn al-Hassan, it's Ibn Walid. And when he narrates from that, you can, to an extent, in terms of ghulu, you can overlook the rest of the sanad, the rest of the chain, because they were extremely particular about ghulu. Yeah.
We said that the sensitivity of the scholars at the time regarding this matter was so high.
And these are the peak of it.
These are the
and
peak
Ibn
of
Walid
it,
and Sheikh Saduq are the peak of that sensitivity. Yeah. And so this coming from Sheikh Saduq holds so much more weight. Sheikh Saduq says, I fell asleep, and he's written this himself. They have the transcripts and his own writing. In fact, if I read it for you in Arabic, it's all in first person. فَرَأَيْتُ كَأَنِّي. So he says, I see myself in Makkah, and I'm doing tawaf. And I finish my seventh tawaf, and I'm going towards, and I go towards the Hajar to do the salam, istilam, right? And he says, Amanati Adaytu is the dua that you recite. He says, I was saying this, and I saw the 12th Imam. He says himself, I saw the 12th Imam. Fa'ara Mawlana Al-Qa'im Sahib al-Zaman. Myself, I saw him. And this is Sheikh Saduq speaking. Waqifan bi bab al-Ka'bah. He was standing next to the Ka'bah. Fa'adnu minhu ala shughulin qalb. So I neared him, I came near him, and I was in my own thoughts. And he saw that I am in this state. Fa'alima ma fi nafsi. He saw that I was in this state. And I said salam to him. He replied salam to me. And then he taught the first thing the Imam tells him. ثُمَّ قَالَ لِي لِمَ لَا تُصَنِّفُ كِتَابًا فِي الْغِيبَةِ. Why don't you write a book about ghibah? The same thoughts that he had.
Mm.
Why don't you write a book about ghibah? حَتَّى تُكْفَى مَا قَدْ هَمَّكْ. Till you get rid of everything that's been bothering you.
Mm.
Complete it all. فَقُلْتُ لَهُ يَبْنَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ قَدْ صَنَّفْتُ فِي الْغِيبَةِ أَشْيَاءَ. I've written a lot of things in the ghibah, oh son of Prophet, I've written things. It says, فَقَالَ لَيْسَ عَلَى ذَلِكَ السَّبِيلِ. Not the way that you haven't. Now look at these last words. أَمُرُكَ. I'm ordering you as your imam. These are the words of Sheikh Saduq. And تُصَنِّفْ. I'm ordering you to like write this book. وَلَكِنْ. And this is the point that we're going to answer with. وَلَكِنْ صَنِّفِ الْآن. Write a book this time. كِتَابًا فِي الْغَيْبَةِ. About ghibah. وَذْكُرْ فِي غَيْبَاتِ الْأَنْبِيَاءِ. And record in that the ghaybats and the occultations of the previous prophets.
Hmm.
Now, what does this mean? I mean, sometimes I remember the first time I read this or heard this, I was like, what's the relevance of this? Why is the Imam, I instruct you, I order you. What's the relevance of this? This answers all of the questions. Because if we're able to prove that the previous prophets, and we'll come further, our holy prophet, he mentions that, and our imams, too, in a certain way, were, in a way, when we describe ghaiba as, well, that's the next point we're going to, how, what is ghaiba? What do we mean by ghaiba? Mm-hmm. When we describe it in a particular way, when they had this, then all the questions that we face about ghaiba are repeated over there. And over there, because since we've accepted it, all the Muslims accept it. The ghaiba of Prophet Yusuf, everyone accepts it. The ghaiba of Prophet Musa, 40 days, everyone accepts it. Our holy prophet, everyone accepts it. I'll mention some of the points. The ghaiba of our, for example, 10th and 11th Imam, everyone accepts it. Right? They were out of contact with the people. I'll explain what it means. When we accept that, naturally the question solves itself. This in Arabic is called jawab naqdi, right? In Hausa we call jawab naqdi. It means you haven't solved the issue in their mind, but you've given them an example to solve it. It's like, for example, a person says, how can a helicopter fly? It's such a heavy object. But you say planes are heavier.
Yeah.
See, it's jawab naqdi. It means you haven't solved the issue. You didn't explain to them that the...
But you know that they know about airplanes, and sort of by giving him the example of airplanes, it solves this particular issue from this perspective.
So
basically,
this is one of the main ways that we can easily solve the matter of ghaiba and all the questions that follow. Although, inshallah, we'll go into the detail, but this is, I think it's a really beautiful way to start that. Sheikh Saduq took up this book. And Kamaluddin, in that way, holds a lot of weight for us.
Yeah.
Being Sheikh Saduq, being ordered by the Imam, well... We don't know if it happened, but Sheikh Saduq, the one that's the one very careful about
to clarify this thing on dreams, dreams don't normally have hujjat on us, right? So Sheikh Saduq, if he decided to act on it, obviously that's his own personal decision. That doesn't mean that we just go and say, okay, because Sheikh Saduq had a dream, therefore this book has this another holiness
correct,
to it. Yeah,
correct.
So we shouldn't take it out of proportion.
No.
Yeah?
I mean, the Imam orders for the book to be written, but the way that the alim writes it is based on our knowledge as humans.
It's his own understanding.
But we can say that apart from that, Sheikh Saduq, being the meticulous, particular scholar that he is, and that everyone agrees, when he writes his book like this, and he explains the realities, we can take this with a lot of weight. But yes, of course,
definitely.
It doesn't have hujjiyah in the sense that it doesn't have validity and it's not accepted just because the Imam ordered it. In the end, it's the work of a scholar.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any sort of isma or anything to it.
Yeah.
Okay, I said the third thing that I want to speak about very briefly is ghaiba. What does ghaiba mean? And after this, we'll go into the main discussion, inshallah. See, ghaiba, a lot of the times, again, we have a misunderstanding when it comes to ghaiba. Ghaiba, if we take it to mean non-existing of the Imam, the non-existence of the Imam, then all of these issues come up. If ghaiba, and sometimes maybe this in our minds, and maybe the mu'mineen have this in their minds at times, that ghaiba means that the Imam's not here. Means he's not around.
Mm.
He doesn't know what's going on. He's not with us.
Sort of because it comes from this, we're used to the word ghaib, which sounds to us like this is behind the curtains of this normal world, you know, the physical world. So we feel like he's not in the physical world anymore.
Maybe we could be from that, yeah. But when we look at the hadith, it's completely not the idea that the hadith present. We have many hadith that say the 12th Imam is walking around. Just for a second, think about this. I mean, is this something to think about, right? Just now, for example, let's say, what are the issues going on in the world? Let's say, for example, we had a really cold winter. The Imam is among the cold winter.
Mm.
We had a hot summer. The Imam is with the hot summer. The Imam is here with us, present, fully, as a human. This is the idea that the hadith mentioned. Now, when you understand this, again, a lot of the questions that will follow will be answered. These three set the tone for the rest.
Yeah.
I just want to read two quick hadith and we'll move on to the main discussion. Very beautiful hadith. One hadith that we may have heard, that, again, these are both from Kamaluddin. The Naib of the Imam says, Wallahi inna sahiba hadha al-amr la yahduru al-mawsim kulla sana. That the 12th Imam is present in Hajj every year. Yara al-nas, he sees the people. Wa ya'rifuhum, he sees me and you, and he recognizes us. Wa yarawnahu, and they see him as well, his physical body. Wa la ya'rifunahu, but they don't recognize him. It's really important for us to understand ghaiba means this. Means that the Imam is amongst us, but we don't recognize him. Or this hadith, for example, this is really very clear. يَغِيبُ عَنْهُمْ شَخْصُهُ. This is really beautiful, the words here. The ulama have used these words. This is a hadith. The ulama have mentioned points about these words. That وَيَغِيبُ عَنْهُمْ شَخْصُهُ, that the physical person of the imam is not recognized by them. Why? What is shakhs in...
The identity is not recognized. So they see the physical body, but they don't recognize the identity.
Identity. Yeah. But what's this against shakhsiyyah? Shakhsiyyah, his standing, his...
Personality?
Imamat, I want to say.
Okay.
So his position.
Okay.
And the position Allah has given him. That's not missing. That's very present and very alive. And that's what we speak about. But his person, that you say that, for example, by name, this person... Mm-hmm. That you won't be able to tell.
They don't identify him.
Yeah. You can't identify him. So this is one. These are the three introductions and the points that we want to start with. Okay. After that, we can move on to the main discussion, inshallah. The roles of the imam that we mentioned in the previous session, the five roles that were mentioned as five in this course.
Yeah.
How, and so first of all, does the imam carry out all five of these?
Mm-hmm.
And how?
Okay.
So this is the discussion that we want to
So should we start with the first one?
Let's go for it.
Yeah.
So the first one that we had was that the imam is supposed to guide the people and protect the religion from any sort of alteration, any sort of form of misguidance. And we have many ahadith about this, and it was explained well in its session, inshallah. But now our question is that, can the imam guide the people at the time of ghibah? So the quick answer to this, okay, if we want to sum it up and we'll move into the details, is that guidance, does it have to be done by the imam himself as a person, or can he use other people to pass on guidance? This is one question. Now somebody may say that no, the imam must do it himself. The answer that comes to mind straight away is that the Holy Quran, the Prophet's message, the imams themselves, when they wanted to guide the people, when they were in different cities, they would send representatives. Or not even a set representative, a companion. Sometimes later in the later imams, we had the system and the network that was there to spread the message.
Yes, because that was becoming big, and that had need to have that authentication
formal.
It needed to
be formal. But at the start, we have many ahadith that are going to sum off, where the imams would send a person to another city and tell him that ajlis fil masjid wa afti lin nas. Sit in the mosque and take out fatwa for people. Take out as in give the right fatwa.
Yeah, tell people what needs to be done in terms of religion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have other ahadith that we're going to sum off. So this was the case at all times. Why does it have to be that the imam himself does that?
But so can I take it further though? Claim that why can't imam guide himself directly without the person realizing it's the imam? Once you've established this fact that imam is present, we don't recognize him. Well, it's possible. For example, in Hajj, I remember, alhamdulillah, everybody gets the tawfiq to go for Hajj. You know, somebody we recognize each other sometimes. You know, somebody might see how I'm praying and recognize the Mashiach, come and ask me a question. And I give them the answer. They don't know who I am. But they hear my answer, and for whatever reason, they trust that answer. Maybe we can bump into the imam, ask a question, and he answers.
Very much so.
And so there is a way he can guide us.
Very much so. But on the other hand, so that's very much in its own place, and we have a hadith that even speak about that. And we're coming to that. The scholars actually, we have narrations, as in stories narrated to us, in cases narrated, that the scholar, like Sheikh Saduq, this inspiration, even if the book is in Ma'asum, the fact that he drew up in one whole volume of it, pretty much, most of the volume, he mentions the ghaibah of more than 7-8 prophets, more than that. This is an inspiration and guidance from the imam. Okay, now with its own, the dream and all of that in its own place. But we can at least say that it's likely that the imam guided him.
Yeah. There's nothing stopping the imam from guiding, although he's not identifiable.
So this is one of the answers that Sayyid Murtada, for example, says very strongly. Why are you saying that the imam can't guide? The imam can guide. But that's a possibility. Is that the main form of guidance? No. These are one of cases that happen once in a while. Or for example, you want to make it slightly more systematic. These are all possibilities. But for now, we don't have to establish that this is happening.
Mm.
Because the question is right now, can the imam do this? Yes, the imam can.
Yeah.
Is guidance from Allah, that the imam was the media and the medium for, is this going to be halted at the time of ghibah? We're trying to say no. One of the possibilities is the Imam guides, and a sort of a stronger possibility, what we could say, is that the Imam guides in those very sensitive cases.
Yeah.
For example, right now, the Shia population of a certain country, or even the whole Shia population, is on crossroads. There's tough decisions. Should they, for example, side with these people or with these people? The Imam can, over here, guide the head of the community, the people that are trusted. And we have stories about this.
But the whole purpose of ghaiba is this, that nobody can come and claim this is from the Imam himself. Yeah. So this is really important.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now we're saying that, look, the Imam's ghaiba does not contradict his role as a guide.
Yes.
But being the time of ghaiba, he cannot come and official and do it openly. And we don't have the right to come and claim, oh, Imam guided me. And I'm doing this based because Imam told me.
So the summary of that is that Shakhsul Imam, the identity, I don't like using his name, otherwise you'd use his name, because in a hadith is not supposed to be mentioned, it has a special respect. But if you're going to say him guiding is not what we require for this role to happen.
Yeah.
He can guide through the ulama, he can guide as an unknown figure, like you mentioned. He can also guide through other means. That one of the main means that we find in the hadith for the time of ghaiba is the scholars.
Mm.
That the Imams had trained the scholars. Especially when it came near to...
When you say through the scholars, you don't mean he's talking to them or he has a connection with them. You mean through that general training. Teachings. Yeah, the teachings.
So from the sixth Imam, especially at the sixth Imam's time, where there was the burst of knowledge, and we have a hadith that 4,000 students studied at a time under the sixth Imam.
For that time, that's a huge number.
That's a crazy. Yeah. Even today, if you look at 4,000 students in the Hawza, for example, directly studying in a city like Medina, is a very big number. And some of the hadith make it seem like in one meeting sometimes they would have such numbers. When you have those narrations being spread, okay, when we have today, for example, our reliable books, our Kutub Arba'a, for example, and other reliable books that we have, although not, I'm sure you've mentioned, these are not 100% reliable, they need to be authenticated and all that. With it. But these are books that were written in early years, and many of the hadith in this are definitely from the Imam. Some of them maybe are not. When we have these teachings and the training from the sixth Imam and all of the Imams, I don't know, some people sometimes when we're speaking about the sixth Imam, they make him, you know, the Imam that we have and all the others are less. It's not the case. The sixth Imam had this role. And we have many hadiths from all the Imam, but the sixth Imam was given this role and this task to spread the ilm. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have, for example, the Ashab of the sixth Imam were very many.
Mm-hmm.
And then the seventh Imam, again, the seventh Imam, interestingly, went into a period of ghaiba. There's a difference in how many years he spent in prison, but the minimum is 7 or 8 years he spent in prison, right?
Which
seven
is technically a form of ghaiba.
It is. It's ghaiba, I mean. You're away from your people. You have, in fact, in a way...
It's worse than this ghaiba.
It's worse in a way. Yeah. Because prison, you're completely blocked off from your companions. Over here, the Imam is in touch. Although, of course, I'm just giving an example.
Yeah.
This was passed down. These teachings were passed down. And the scholars were trained. They were taught, even today, if you look at Rijal, for example, Rijal, one of it is to say that Sahih Daif. But the reality of Rijal is explaining who these people were. That's why, for example, if you pick up like Keshi, it's not like Fihristusi, this is Thiqatun, Daifun, you know, Kufiyun. Yeah. And no, Keshi gives a story about him. He says he spent time with the Imam like this, he went to Hajj with the Imam told him this, he slept at the Imam's house, the Imam told him this, all of these kind of things, right? So you understand who these people, and the Imams were training these companions. And there's so many hadith that show that the Imams trained them.
So basically the Imams, because we look at their mission as one mission, right? So knowing that the ghaiba is going to happen, they've set up a system and trained the companions and the scholars in a way that during ghaiba, they are more or less able to
do the minimum, fill to
a certain extent the gap.
I go further and say that even at the time of Hudur, when the Imam comes, the system will still exist.
Yeah.
Because the Imam is in one geographical location. Right now, even any country in the world, even for example, if you are to have a government that's based on Islamic values, you have the leader in the center, but then you need people to spread.
And we mentioned with Sheikh Kadhim just in the previous session that when Imam comes and establishes a government, you're not going to have angels coming in and helping him out. It's the same people who are going to, and that's why he needs Ansar, like Sheikh Kadhim mentioned,
exactly.
Ansar to help him out.
And that's why one of the missions of the Imam was to always train these people. So the Imams trained these people, and they created a wealth of hadith for us, alongside the Quran, not to put that under scope, the Imams, of course, the Imams and the Quran are together.
Yeah.
Alongside the Quran and Hadith, these ulama were trained to be able to carry out the basic guidance.
Mm.
And we have cases in history where, at least it's been narrated and reported, that at the time of ghaiba, the Imam would come and show the ulama the path.
Yeah.
See, I'm not trying to say, again, this starts with our first introduction. Not that the imam comes and tells him everything and guides the community perfectly. It's like the imam was here.
Yeah, and said, that would be the, yeah, obviously. That,
then you're not waiting for anything. Yeah. There's no intizar left. The imam comes and guides at places. For example, if this thing was going to happen over here, really Shia in its whole entirety would face a calamity. Yeah. Would face an issue. Here, the imam, we have cases in history mentioned, which will come to one or two at the end, inshallah. Yeah.
So again, the wisdom of ghaiba does not allow for imam to be so open and guiding like openly, because again, we said that ghaiba had to happen basically.
And as we mentioned, that it's a test, it's a difficulty. The ashab and the people are going through this difficulty that we have. Yeah. So this is when it comes to the role of guidance. So the answer, if we want to summarize it in a few words, the role of guidance is carried out by the imam himself, but mainly by the ulama that are guided by the imam. Interestingly, one of the scholars very beautifully says over here that somebody can come and ask and say that, okay, so the imam, if he's not around, then the scholars are doing it. What happened to all of this that the imam needs to be there and everything? And the scholar very beautifully mentions that it is through the imam's permission that we use these scholars. In fact, it's through the imam's guidance and continuity that we have these scholars as reliable sources of knowledge. If it wasn't for the imam, these scholars don't have any reliability in our eyes. They're as good as any other man on the road. Why is this scholar important for me? And as the hadith mentioned, let me just read one part of this now, that he says that obey him, whatever this person tells you. Fasma' lahuma. He's talking about al-amri, so the two, the father and the son, that were the na'ibs of the imam, right? Al-amri wa ibnuhu thiqatan. They're both thiqa. They're both people that you can. Fama addaya ilayka anni fa'anni yu'addiyan. Whatever they say is from me, it's from me.
It's from me, yeah.
And we have other hadith. This, somebody can say, no, this is just for the na'ib khas. We have other hadith that talks about, for example, inna abana min al-taghlib qad rawa anni riwayatan kathira. Fama rawahu laka anni farwihi anni. Whatever abana min al-taghlib tells you, and he was one of the great ashab, right? It's just fil masjid wa aftinas was about aban. He says, whatever he reports from you, from me, you can report it to others and say that I said it. See, the imam are teaching us at this time that refer to these people. If the imams weren't there, then why should we refer to these people? The value of these people are that they have the connection with the imam.
Yeah. But then a question that often comes is that if the imam is guiding them, as you're suggesting, why is there a difference of opinions between the scholars?
Yeah. So this again is answered by the start. See, the imam is, we didn't say the imam is guiding them in the sense that every decision, just like, for example, if the Sistani wants to take a fatwa, okay, Bismillah ar-Rahman, wajib, imam, what's the answer? Okay. The next one, imam was, it's like, you know, he's doing dictation for the imam. This isn't the idea that we have of ghaiba. In fact, ghaiba is a time, I didn't read this hadith at the start, it's nice you asked this, I'll read this now. The imam says that, innama hiya mihna min Allah. This is going to be an imtihan from Allah. Imtahana biha khalqahu. That it's going to be a tough time for the people. لو علم آباؤكم وأجدادكم دينا أصح من هذا لاتبعوا. It's going to be a tough time. Yeah. And that's why the imam's guidance for these people are in a way that, look, is it, for example,
it's to stop them from going completely astray.
Badly astray. Yeah. In a way that the religion would be hurt. Yeah. Now, can we say that what decisions the imam has to come in, where it doesn't have to come in? We can't differentiate that. We're not in a position where we understand that.
But what we know is that imam is making sure that the general movement of the Muslim and the Ummah is towards the right direction.
Intellectually, we can prove that.
Yeah.
Historically, it's proven as well. I mean, Shia, if you look at it from the time of the first imam, the time of the Prophet, the first imam, Imam Ali, from that time, Shia was bound to not exist.
Yeah.
And now you reach the fourth, the third imam, you know, sometimes you just feel really it was mu'jizah that they didn't kill Imam Sajjad. Why didn't they? I mean, they did everything they could. They even hurt the women. Why didn't they kill Imam Sajjad? Yeah. Shia had to finish then. Karbala had to finish. Everything was going to be over. Muawiyah was dead by that time. Yazid and the rest would take over. And the Umayyads would have the Khilafah and everything would be back to normal. But Allah protected it. And the ghaiba is the same. Yeah. There's been so many tight points at the ghaiba that really it was felt that what's going on just now? Where are the Shias today? What's going on? And then you see that it comes up. The openings come up. And miraculously, I mean, when we talk about the miracles and the stories, sometimes, for example, you say, no, this one, I'm not sure. This one, you know, it sounds right, but I'm not sure. This one was a dream. This one, when you put 100 together, 200 together, you say, okay.
And not by small people, like it's not a villager coming and saying it's like a prophet.
Sheikh Sadouq, These are the people coming and speaking. Mm. When they come and say these things, at that time you feel, okay, I mean, I can't say this one is correct, but from these, I'm sure some are correct. Them, I mean, yeah. A person who has a relatively untouched conscious would say that, yeah, I mean, this is understandable, this is acceptable. Yeah.
Can I say like this, that at the end of the day, this also allowing this difference of opinions is a sort of way of doing tarbiyah of the scholars and helping them, you know, think about things and grow in there. Because at the end of the day, this is a whole development and a growth for the ummah, right? The ummah wasn't ready to take that final imam. He had to go into ghaiba, and there's a natural process that has to take for us to reach that pinnacle where now the imam can come and establish that initial goal that Allah had for humanity, right? To bring that adl and qist on the earth. And for that to happen, humanity has to grow and progress. And the forefront of this growth are the ulama and the people who are trying their best in terms of knowledge and taqwa. So can we say that by imam, again, whispering everything in their ear, he sort of wouldn't allow that growth to happen, that growth that's necessary for this path?
Yeah, I mean, that's not specific to the time of ghibah. That yeah, even of course, at the time of the sixth imam, when he would teach his companions to go and do iftar and teach the people, it's the same shan. So
I guess we were discussing the hadith between Mu'alla and Ibn Abi Ya'fur, they were actually debating, discussing. They went to the imam to ask, but then there was discussions happening between the scholars and they were disagreeing with each other.
And we have times where they couldn't go to the imam. Mm. We have a hadith that the imam said, the person comes and says, imam, two of your companions saying two things. The imam teaches them how to select the right piece of information. And it comes until the end where the person says, there's no way. So the imam says, okay, tawakkuf. You're not sure? Put aside. Basically, the imam taught them how to resolve differences. The imam didn't tell them everything you have a problem with, come to me. Because there was times where they couldn't come to the imam.
Yeah.
Differences existed and they will exist. But keep this in mind, it's important for our viewers to keep in mind that differences are not in the most fundamental matters.
Yeah.
Differences are in matters that, like I said at the time, the imams existed and the imam didn't make it seem like we cannot take these differences, this is just ridiculous. And no, these are differences that are natural.
So the fundamentals throughout the whole history, they've been protected.
The scholars, now this is a point that I wanted to mention over here as well, that the scholars, when we say that the scholars get guidance from the imam, is really beautiful. I don't think many of the people, as in the Shias, know this, but our ulama today, the great scholars. For example, you look at the likes of the Maraja today, look at Ayatollah Sistani, look at, for example, Ayatollah Khamenei, look at the different Maraja that we have, right? Ayatollah Safi Gulbegani, the passed away just now, Ayatollah Makarim Shazi, Ayatollah Subhani, Ayatollah Zanjani, all the different names, and Ayatollah Ishaq Fayaz, Ayatollah Hakim, that passed away recently as well. We look at these Maraja, all of them have a chain of teachers that they didn't spend 1 day with or 2 days with or 3 days with, that they spent 20, 30, 40 plus years with. They lived alongside, and they say, in Farsi, sine bi sine. They got things from the heart, from chest to chest, from inside to inside. And this chain leads all the way back to the imams, all of these ulama. So this line of Islam that's come down, this is the line that's passed straight from the sixth imam.
Yeah.
And the fundamentals are consistent.
Yeah.
But for
we
example,
have differences of opinions in some of the in the Furu'at. The core is always
the
been
core
the same.
Is together. Yeah. This is really important to keep in mind. There's one more hadith I want to read over here. And I'm not going well for time just now. But this is a very beautiful hadith, again talking about how the ulama's role at the time of the imams. I want to speak about this because the ulama at the time of the imam had this role. Again, this is a naqdi answer, right? Like I'm trying to say that it's not new in ghibah.
Mm.
The time of the imams also, they had to use paths. In fact, Allama Tabatabai says, one of the ayat of the Quran shows this. وَأُحِيَ إِلَيْكَ وَمَنْ بَلَغْ. Let me just search it exactly, the verse, so I can read it perfectly. قُلِ اللَّهُ شَهِيدٌ بَيْنِي وَبَيْنَكُمْ وَأُحِيَ إِلَيَّ. The Prophet says, وَأُحِيَ إِلَيَّ هَذَا الْقُرْآنِ لِأُنذِرَكُمْ. So that I warn you. وَمَنْ بَلَغْ لِأُنذِرَكُمْ بِهِ وَمَنْ بَلَغْ. So that I warn you guys and the people that it reaches to. It means there's some people that I'm not going to warn. It's going either my writings or my words or you that I've trained as reliable people that they will refer to. Because we're going from topic to another. The Quran also refers us to scholars. We have the ayah of Surah Tawbah, as it may be discussed in the course yet?
Not yet.
Let me mention so you can just look it up. Surah Tawbah, ayah 122. That Allah says that there should be a group of mu'minin that travel to Medina to learn religion. They return back to their people. They warn their people. Their people take heed.
Hmm.
means that the message is being spread at the time of the Prophet by other than the Prophet. This is something that we always had. Now, in this light, look at this hadith that is in Keshi as well. It's got a very good chain of narration. Bashir al-Mukhbitina bil-Jannah. The sixth Imam says, Bashir al-Mukhbitina. The Mukhbitina have a special rank. It's a special level of ikhlas. Give them the glad tidings of Jannah. Who are they? Buraid ibn Muawiyah al-Ijli. Wa Abu Basir Layth ibn al-Bakhtari al-Muradi. Wa Muhammad ibn Usim wa Zurara. Four very big companions. Arba'atun Nujaba. Najib, very noble people. Umana'ullahi ala halalihi wa harami. They're Allah's trusted people over his halal and haram. That's enough, right? No. Lawla ha'ula, if it was not for these, in qata'at atharu nubuwa wa darasat. Nubuwa and it's the traditions of nubuwa, the message would have become cut off and would have ended. Means these people protected it. There's nothing wrong with that. The imams, the sixth imam is telling us this. Of course, like we mentioned, it's through the sixth imam themselves.
This hadith really blows up the and into perspective the ayah that Shaykh Qadir mentioned, Man Ansari Ilallah, when the Hawariyun was saying, you know, for, at the end of the day, the imams and the Prophet need those Ansar to fulfill the mission he had come up with. As a lonely man, he cannot do that, right?
So this is, I think, a quick discussion when it comes to the guidance.
The guidance, okay.
The role of guidance.
So before we move on to the second role, I think let's take a short break, okay?
Sure.
And then we can continue, inshallah. So brothers and sisters, we'll be back in a few moments. See you then, inshallah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد النبي وآله وسلم تسليما اللهم لك الحمد على ما جرى به قضاءك في أوليائك الذين استخلصتهم لنفسك ودينك إذ اخترت لهم جزيل ما عندك من النعيم المقيم الذي لا زوال له ولا اضمحلال بعد أن شرطت عليهم الزهد في درجات هذه الدنيا الدنيا وزخرفها وزبرجها فشرطوا لك ذلك وعلمت منهم الوفاء به فقبلتهم وقربتهم وقدمت لهم الذكر العليل والثناء الجليل وأهبطت عليهم ملائكتك وكرمتهم بوحيك ورفدتهم بعلمك وجعلتهم الذريعة إليك والوسيلة إلى رضوانك فبعض أسكنته جنتك إلى أن أخرجته من غار وبعض حملته في فلكك ونجيته ومن آمن معه من الهلكة برحمتك وبعض اتخذته لنفسك خليلا وسألك لسان صدق في الآخرين فأجبته وجعلت ذلك عليا وبعض كلمته من شجرة تكليما وجعلت له من أخيه ردئا ووزيرا وبعض أولدته من غير أهل وآتيته البينات وأيدته بروح القدس وكل شرعت له شريعة
ونهجت له من غاجر وتخيرت له أوصيا مستحفظا بعد مستحفظ من مدة إلى مدة إقامة لدينك وحجة على عبادك ولئلا يزول الحق عن مقره ويغلب الباطل على أهله ولا يقول أحد لولا أرسلت إلينا رسولا منذرا وأقمت لنا علما هاديا فنتبع آياتك من قبل أن نذل ونخزى إلى أن انتهيت بالأمر إلى حبيبك ونجيبك محمد صلى الله عليه وآله فكان كمن تجبته سيد من خلقته وصفوة من اصطفيته وأفضل من اجتبيته وأكرم من اعتمدته قدمته على أنبيائك وبعثته إلى الثقلين من عبادك وأوطأته مشارقك ومغاربك وسخرت له البراق وعرجت بروحه إلى سمائك.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum and welcome back to the session. We're with Sheikh Ali discussing on how to reconcile between the roles of the Imam and the fact that the Imam is in ghaibah and is not amongst us, at least in the apparent way. And alhamdulillah, we finished discussing the first role of the Imam, which is to guide people. And we went on in a lot of detail. So let's move on to the second one, inshallah.
Sure. So the second role that was discussed was the tarbiyat and the spiritual training of the people. This one part of it is through instructions. In essence, one part of it is, if you want to make it theory and practical. So there's a part that's the theoretical instructions on training people, means what to do, how to be in their lives, all of this. Mm. This falls under the same points we mentioned.
Yeah, it's guidance.
In itself. When it comes to the actual giving the spiritual growth, there's a discussion over here, and I'm sure in the role of the Imam, when you mentioned it, we went into that and it was discussed that this is something that like the Quran says, right? وَالَّذِي بَعَثَ فِي الْأُمِّينَ رَسُولًا مِّنْهُمْ يَتْلُوا عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتِي وَيُزَكِّيهِمْ. It's one of the roles of the Prophet to do tazkiyah of the people. Yeah. Right? And we have many ayat of the Quran, and we should look at some of these, inshallah. The Allah in the Quran orders the Prophet that do istighfar for them. Hey Allah, you're sitting up there using this kind of image, right? You're sitting up there, you do istighfar. Forgive them. What's istighfar? Ghafara, right? Ighfir lahum. No, istighfir, right? Or the malaika are sitting doing istighfar for the people. What are you doing? No, this is one of the roles of the Prophet. Tazkiyah is a role of the Prophet. It's also a role of the Imams, according to our Islamic sources.
Yeah.
Now, this in the time of ghaibah, the actual real tazkiyah happens the same way as it does in the time of the huzur and when the Imams are. There's no difference over here. Because this isn't a physical movement. It's like the Imam, you know, does something physically. It's a metaphysical reality.
And one of the aspects of tarbiyah that we had mentioned, at least the main example we had given, was the likes of Unwan al-Basri, where Unwan al-Basri would come and Imam would use a certain method to spark that light in him. And then the guidance he would give to him would be a specific guidance according to him. So what about this role during ghaibah?
So over here, for example, when we're talking about the specific guidance, the same rule applies to the guidance above.
Mm.
That the Imam in certain cases does it directly. And we have many stories of this, many stories. And we also have that the Imam has put the methodology of this in the hadith so strongly that we have teachers that are scholars that are able to provide that special guidance.
So specialists in this, like people who are trained in this. Yeah.
The same way you have mujtahids in fiqh, you also have people that have worked in these fields.
Yeah.
And I have mastered these fields and are able to guide the Imam guide the people, the same with the imamut.
Yeah.
And this is something that the imam actually taught the scholars to. So you can find very many ahadith that actually explain. See, this, the way to spot this is that we have a hadith where the imam teaches the companion to teach, not only to fix yourself, to teach the method. So we have many ahadith of this. So this tarbiyah in this sense is done. So if the point was more focused in the previous sessions on these one-on-one guidance, one point that we mentioned over here that we can open up a little more in this role is the actual spiritual progress of the people. And we have a hadith about this, and there's even ayat of the Quran that show, as I mentioned, yuzakkihim. So that's that for now. Let's move on to the next one.
Okay. Yeah.
Is there anything over here? Should we go ahead?
So it may mostly fits under the first one.
Guidance. Right? It's guidance, very similar. Yeah.
So tarbiyah is a sort of a guidance, but more specific to a person.
Guidance, yeah. The third one is setting up government on the land. Now this fits in very beautifully from two aspects. Because one, if you want to make such, I'll say the bad one first. The one that the imam really cannot do in the time of ghaiba is this one. But the solution is that this is exactly what the ghaiba is for.
It's for.
The ghaiba is for, if you look at the hadith, يَمْلَأُ الْأَرْضَ قِسْطًا وَعَدْلًا, is one of the most commonly mentioned concepts when it comes to the hadith of ghaiba. That the imam is actually there to set up that godly and divine government when he's now appears and he shows himself.
So the ghaiba is sort of like Sheikh Migdal also mentioned, that is a time where when people are so much in their humanistic way of thinking, where they think only human beings are enough for them and they're not looking for a divine help, then that help won't come because they won't appreciate it, they'll even put it aside.
Exactly.
The people need to wake up that they need divine help, and then when the imam comes to establish this peace, then he would be able to take that, really take that government and be able to establish
it. So in fact, this, not the imam not being able to do this, is not only an issue, it's actually
This is a solution for that.
You fix it. And also, if anyone wants to sort of answer it in a different way, you can also say that none of the imams, except for Imam Ali for a short time and Imam Hassan for a very short time, got the chance to do this. So anyway, this was a thing like yesterday's session had, that there's two sides of the story.
There's two sides. And if the people are not going to give the opportunity, whether the imam is in ghaiba or is hadir, or is present, doesn't make a difference.
In fact, the same way you said there's two roles, we can split these roles, in fact, into the two as well.
Yeah.
And that Allah's side is always there. The people's side, well, it's on the people.
Yeah. But then Allah's side in the time of ghaiba is also limited in a certain way. So in terms of the direct guidance, right?
But
he does
again,
it through means, but ensures that the fundamentals are there.
But and the parts that are missing is for us to realize that there's a test and wake up.
Yeah.
If we were in that very nice state, until the room doesn't get cold, you don't switch on the heater, right? It has to get a little cold to switch on the heater.
Yeah.
Okay, the third one, sorry, one, two, three, four. The fourth one is to complete the argument. As the Holy Quran mentions, or as the Hadith mentioned, itmamul hujjah, right? That, look, now you have no more excuses. Guidance has been sent, you have no more excuses. This very beautifully falls into place in the time of ghaiba. In fact, those people that doubt ghaiba, this is where a problem comes up for them. From two aspects. One, the intellectual, one, the textual. The intellectual aspect is this, that if a person wants to say that, look, right now, in the time I am at right now, where I am, Allah hasn't sent any guide for me. Yeah, the Quran is there, correct. But the Quran itself, as the hadith explained to us, needs a mubayyin. There's nobody here. Allah hasn't sent his guide. His guidance is incomplete. But when the ghaiba happens, look, right now, this is a very beautiful concept in ghaiba. It's a general point that carries through. A lot of these points, we need to sort of store them somewhere and think about these over time. One of them is this, that the imam is here. My imam is here for me. Allah has sent an imam for me. Me, Ali, sitting here, the imam is sent for me. He's my imam. Right? And this only happens when the ghaiba is there. If there was no ghaiba and the imam was to, I don't know how you'd, I mean, let's say he's not born yet, according to some, maybe, other sects that they mentioned, that they may have this view.
Yeah.
They're not born yet. Look, right now, Allah hasn't sent a guide for me. The argument and the hujjah of Allah is not complete. In fact, this happens. And in fact, this is where you find many ahadith that clearly mention that Allah will not leave his earth empty from a guide because Allah must complete the argument. At every single point in time, there must be that person that, look, if I want to give a quality, the quality is this, that Allah has sent, that look, this is your guide. Even if that guide may have traveled. Like, if you want to give an example of ghaiba in this explanation, what we've come to under, it's like a trip. The Holy Prophet went for trips.
One example, it's like a person living in a different city, relative to the Prophet being...
So one of the ulama mentions that the 3 days that the Prophet was in Hijra and he was in the cave, that's the Prophet's ghaiba. And somebody says, 3 days is nothing compared to 1,100 years or whatever. But the point is that, look, on those 3 days, these roles, the Prophet was supposed to carry out these roles. These roles didn't stop for 3 days, right? It's not like the Hujjah of Allah. Allah said, okay, 3 days, you guys are free. You do what you want. My argument's incomplete on these 3 days. You guys have the right to sin and everything. Go for it. After these 3 days, then it's back on. And for example, guidance. It's not like these 3 days, the Muslims were completely, you know, lost. They didn't know. And it was the time of Hijra, right? It was a very tough time. They were threatened over here, the Medina. They didn't know how they're going to end up over there, right? But this was a time where all of these roles carried on, even though the Prophet was in ghaiba. But at the time of the Prophet, the way the religion was, from our understanding, even though it could be incomplete, Allah's hikmah knows it, we can guess and predict that a longer ghaiba would have had harm, would have caused harms to the Muslims. Yeah. They wouldn't be able to continue. Yeah. In, for example, you look in Uhud, when they heard that the Prophet had passed away, they lost themselves. Right? At that time, it was very different. But for example, later on, with the way that the imams set everything, when it comes to today's ghaiba, it's not a thing that we can't take.
Yeah. And at this point as well, if we think about it, had the Prophet been taken as a prisoner, for example, people would not have lost their minds because he's still there
amongst them.
So when he dies, it's like, oh, there is no more guide for us, right? So that idea that a guide should always be in every time is something that sort of like something we understand that should be there.
Correct. And you can say in Uhud, for example, the Khilafah also wasn't that clear for everyone yet, because Uhud is at the start, right? It's not that clear for everyone yet.
Yeah.
Correct. So to summarize the point that we're mentioning, Allah doesn't leave the earth empty ever from a person. That completes the argument.
Okay.
The same mention, right? I mean, if you make it sort of visual, there's like both have to come, right?
Yeah.
Allah has to send his part. And that's something intellectually proven and textually. So we've proven the intellectually until now. The people have to come up. Yeah. Right now, so Allah has sent. Right now, for me and you, and when we look at the hadith of man mata wa lam ya'rif imama zamanihi, and these hadith sometimes, what does it mean? Well, this is the same concept. It lies on the same concept. That look, you have an imam. You have a guide.
I think it's sort of a bit like, it's not a great analogy. It's a bit harsh, but you know, it's like we want the guidance of Allah to be in a certain way. Right, it's like, you know how the people said, oh, bring the angels, tell the angels to bring the message. Why you? Okay, we're not going that far. Yeah. But we're saying, oh, Lord, why are you guiding us in this way? We don't want it this way. We want to be with the imam and see him physically. We need to understand, at least convince ourselves firstly intellectually, and then really realize it, that look, Allah is going to send his guide and he's doing his job, right? Allah is immaculate, he's wise, he knows what he needs to do. We have to start accepting that. We take the guidance the way it is in our time, right? And if it's a test,
that's by Allah's wisdom.
It's Allah's wisdom, and we need to sort ourselves out, basically.
Okay, over here, I want to just mention one side point, that some people may say that, what about the people that the message doesn't reach to?
Yeah, so we mentioned those people before, the mustada'afin, those who in the natural process were not exposed to that. So those people, obviously, they're excused. We talk about people who could have, but did not
fall. And this doesn't go against Allah's wisdom, because Allah sent the argument. Yeah. Now, there are certain natural barriers that happened that didn't allow certain people to reach it. That's a separate discussion. So the point that we're trying to make over here is that Allah has completed his argument upon the people every time.
Okay, so a question that comes up to some extent in the mind is that, okay, fine, Allah sends a hujjat every time. But then there's verses in the Quran as well that suggest that before the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, there was a time when there was no prophets, right? And so, and Allah sent him after that time. So if you can bring the verse, can we discuss that?
For you, the verse. So we have certain verses of the Holy Quran that mention the time of Fatrat. So we have this verse, for example, of the Holy Quran. Surah Ma'idah, verse 19. Ya ahl al-kitab qad ja'akum rasuluna, O people of the book, our prophet has come to you. Yubayyinu lakum ala fatrati min ar-rusul. He comes to explain things after time where fatara means weakness. Means a weakness in regards to prophets. Rusul is mentioned here. Okay, this is the verse, and the rest of the verse we'll speak about shortly. So this is the verse that's being mentioned. We have other verses that also suggest that people before you, and Nadir wasn't sent to them. We have verses, for example, now there's different verses of the Quran that I've got noted down here, that mentioned that there was a time where, for example, the verse of Surah Yasin, لِتُنذِرَ قَوْمًا مَا أُنذِرَ أَبَأُمْ.
Yeah.
And there's other verses that may sound like
there was no hujjah that was sent to them.
For example, this one is another one. Surah Qasas, ayah 46. Those who are interested can check it out as well. Surah Sajda, ayah number 3. Surah Saba, ayah 44. Correct. These are the four verses that we have. And Surah Fatra, Maida 19. So these five together make it seem like, look, you're trying to say that there was never a time where the guidance of Allah wasn't there, the guide of Allah wasn't there. But these ayat suggest otherwise. See, when we look at these verses, they all talk about a Rasul or Nadir. Nadir in the Quran, that is a discussion that we need to have in the Holy Quran, means Rasul as well. Rasul is more specific than Nabi. And Nabi is even different to Wasi. So we have three concepts. And Wasi and Imam to an extent are similar. We have Imam as well. So four concepts if you want. Any of these four are, what's common between these four? The really important point that's common between these four?
They're from Allah.
Yes.
Okay.
They're nas min Allah. That they are specifically designated from Allah. And that completes the argument. The hujjah of Allah is complete when Allah sends. So the ulama, even though they can carry out the guidance to a good extent, this part the ulama can't do. If you remember ages ago, when we spoke about Mubahila, the first few sessions, we mentioned this point over there. That the Holy Prophet picked these five because these were the people that were the carriers of religion.
Yeah.
Not the people that accepted religion. There's a difference between these two. Allah sends a hujjah from himself to complete the argument on the people. Not that from themselves, for example, the warner of Prophet Musa, that's there in the Quran. He came and warned the people.
Yeah.
Ya qawmi mali, I'm guiding you to Jannah and you are guiding me to... And all the different guys. This wasn't a hujjah, it's Mamul Hujjah. Although he was a guide. So the Quran beautifully mentions his story right until the end. But he wasn't Itmam al-Hujjah. Itmam al-Hujjah has to be from somebody that Allah sends. Okay, so we have that Allah has to send someone. On the other side, these ayat all say that there was a period that there was no Rasul. Although, there's also an opinion here that the ayah of Surah Yasin can mean something else totally. And in fact, it's a stronger opinion according to some of the Mufassirin. So put that aside. These three ayah and the ayah of Fatra. Right? That all mention that before you, there was no Rasul or Nadir. Right? The way that we can explain this, the only way that this makes, I mean, you look at the ayat of the Quran, this is the what comes out from the Quran is that Rasul is something more specific than Nabi. So when you look at the Quran, it's like, for example, when somebody says that, for example, let's say somebody says that there has to be a car in the house. And somebody says, no, there's no Nissan in the house. Okay, there's no Nissan, but there could be a Toyota, there could be a Mercedes, there could be anything else. You took out one type.
Yeah.
There can be another type. So here, Rasul, and in
fact... I guess the Rasul has a specific role, and Allah is saying that before you, this specific role was not actualized in...
wasn't necessary even. Because Rasul, now this is a very beautiful discussion that we can have sometime. There's three sets of verses. You're enticing me to get into the discussion. It's really beautiful. Inshallah, maybe we can have a separate session. It'll take a long time to go through. But there's the ayat that say that every لِكُلِّ قَوْمٍ
had.
We have ayat that say لِكُلِّ أُمَّةٍ رَسُول. And in the Quran, Rasul and Ummah are tied together. And قَوْم is tied with had in a smaller concept. So Rasul is a prophet. Now there's difference of opinions and needs discussion, needs more time. But Rasul is a prophet, generally if you want to say that, either he brings a sharia, that's some opinion, of some scholars have this opinion. Some scholars say, no, it's not necessarily they have to bring their own sharia, but it's a prophet that is a complete prophet. Means, not in his body, means complete means he brings a complete new message. Now this, again, it needs discussion, we can look into it, but Ummah also means a bigger thing.
Yeah.
So Qawm is a smaller group, size, Ummah is a bigger group. So, in fact, the previous Rasul was Prophet Isa. Or, for example, if you say slightly closer, there's some hadith that mentioned, there was some closer. But there was a time for about 300 years or 400 years, according to Riwayat, that there was no new Rasul. That and even though the Imams come and say that, they say that this very same time, there were Nabi. In fact, we have the ayat of Surah Yasin itself that say that, إِذْ أَرْسَلْنَا إِلَيْهِمُ اثْنَيْنِ فَكَذَّبُوهُمَا فَعَزَّزْنَا بِثَالِثِ Right? Yasin, this is verse 14, 15, and it goes on. In fact, these prophets that came were after Prophet Isa and before Prophet.
How do we know this?
How do you know this? We have very many hadith that speak about this. Even if you look at the context, it's got some clues. But with the context on its own, it's a bit tough. With the hadith, it becomes very clear. We also have clear hadith that, for example, we have that the daughter of the last prophet met our holy prophet. We have very many hadith, correct, strong hadith that say that the daughter of the last prophet met our holy prophet.
Interesting.
And sort of passed the messages or something like that onto the prophet. And we have certain hadith like this that, so at every time there was a hujjah.
So when Allah says that there was no Rasul, that doesn't mean there was no hujjah. Because hujjah is a concept that's wider than just a Rasul, yeah.
And there's much more that we can look into. I mean, likulli qawmin had itself is a discussion over here. Okay, let me just bring this up quickly and we'll go ahead fast.
Yeah.
The same verse. I said we'd leave it for the end. Ya ahlal kitab qad ja'akum rasuluna yubayyin lakum ala fatratin min ar-rusul. O ahl al-kitab, our prophet has come to you. It's been a time we've not sent a rasul down, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Note that. An taqulu, that you don't come and say, ma ja'ana min bashirin wala nadir. No warner, no carrier of good tidings came for us. See, the Quran is stressing on the concept that every time, every people, and this is this part of the hadith, but if you look at this part of the ayah, sorry, if you look at the verse of the Quran, we have many verses that Allah says that, let me read for you the verses over here. So for example, there's two types of verses over here. We have some verses that mention that on the day of Qiyamah, the people will be asked that, were you not sent a guide? Now, if there was a time when there was no guide, they turn and say, no, we weren't sent a guide. But why does Allah say, أَلَمْ يَأْتِكُمْ رُسُلٌ مِّنْكُمْ أَلَمْ يَأْتِكُمْ رُسُلٌ مِّنْكُمْ This is Surah An'am, verse 130. So Zumur, verse 71.
And it's not asking a question, literally a question.
No, it's a rhetorical question.
It's a rhetorical question, yeah, because after that, reprimand them, basically.
In fact, sometimes, for example, Surah Mulk, after that, they say they regret it. And they say that we wish we'd listened. We did have a guide. We wish we'd listened. Every people had their guides. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we have other ayat of the Quran that say that we cannot do azab of any community until we've sent them a guide.
Yeah.
So itmam hujjah is a concept that's consistent throughout Islam.
Yeah.
But fatra applies to Rasul, that Allah picked. In fact, we have one ayat of the Quran that's very beautiful as well, that Allah says that لَبَعَثْنَا في كل أمة ولو سورة فرقان ولو شئنا لبعثنا في كل قرية نذيرة. If we wanted in every small village, we'd have sent a prophet. Means Allah doesn't want, right? Low in Arabic means that I didn't really want.
Yeah.
If we wanted, we could have. We didn't really want. Means Allah doesn't even want to send every village a specific Rasul. But at every time, there must be the Hujjah of Allah that the people know. They may not, in Ghaybah, they don't know who he is, but they know that the Imam is there.
Yeah.
They can't tell his body apart, if you want to say,
identify him. Yeah.
But they know that the Imam is there. So this is the discussion of fatra, briefly. Okay.
Thank you.
Should we move on to the last role?
Let's move on to the last role.
The last role. So the last role that we have of the Imams is being the mediator between Allah and the people. Is one of the important roles of the Imam. In Arabic, it's called wasitatul faith, right? That the faith and the blessings of Allah and all the different things that Allah has sent upon us go through the Imam.
Yeah.
Now here we're not talking about in the guidance manner, we're talking about in the existential, the taqwini manner.
The taqwini way, yeah.
So this is something that also, this is one of the roles of the Imams, and it was spoken about previously. Again, this at the time of Ghaybah, there's no issue with this happening. It happens completely like it does in the normal time. In fact, this is a proof that the Imam is in ghaibah and not non-existent.
Mm.
Because if we prove that this is the role of the Imam and is necessary at every time, if the Imam wasn't there, who would do this role?
Yeah.
So this is something that we have very clearly. One question comes to mind, I'm sure you discussed over there, I'm just touching upon it quickly from one aspect, is that, are you trying to say that Allah, for example, you know, takes so much consideration for a human? Or for example, sometimes when you speak about this taqwinian existential role, we say that the Imam is a person that, because of the Imam, certain tragedies and calamities are deflected.
Yeah.
So that how can the Imam, just the Imam being there, doesn't even do anything, doesn't even say anything. Because of him, Allah doesn't send.
Mm-hmm.
For certain calamities are deflected. Yeah, not that Allah is waiting to send calamities and say, okay, yeah, they're fine. Yeah. No,
I think this was said about those four names, the four companions that you mentioned.
We have it as well. Over here, Umana was there. Okay. So this hadith didn't have it. But certain times we have in certain hadith.
I think for Zakariya ibn Adam,
we have it, for example, the bala of the city of Qum had reflected. But this is something that we have in the Quran.
Okay.
And you know it very clearly. But sometimes we don't pay attention to these verses. وَمَا كَانَ اللَّهُ لِيَعَذِّبَهُمْ وَأَنْتَ فِيهِمْ Prophet, we're not going to do their adab when you're amongst them. What relation does that have that he's amongst them? They're not going to do adab. And one of the Mufassirin beautifully explains that if you pay attention to the ayat of adab of the prophets, they're always told to leave before. Sometimes you feel, why, Allah, why are you telling us the night before a story? Tell us, you know, the rocks came down, all of that, that's fine. The night before, he always says that they left. And it sometimes says they left some people, they took some people. Prophet Nuh, every prophet, they left their people, then the adab.
But can we not just say that that's because Allah doesn't want them to be part of the adab?
It could be. It could be. I mean, we don't have a clear indication from there, but these hadith, these verses together, one of the possible understandings is this. But from those verses,
I don't have a clear indication from those verses. This point.
Correct.
Yeah.
But from this verse, you can, and it sort of helps us to understand one aspect. Yeah. But yes, we can't say with definite that the Quran intended that from this. Yeah. Or we have this very beautiful verse as well. Surah Balad, again, the 30th sipah, unfortunately, we read very fast. We don't understand what it means. La uqsimu bihadha albalad. I don't swear by this town. Now it's got two opinions. La uqsimu, is it la za'id, or is it that it's so great that I'm not going to swear by it because Allah swears by a lot of things in the Quran. Yeah. Or some people say, no, it just means that I do swear. There's two opinions. Wa anta hillu bihadha albalad. This city is so precious for me when you're staying in it. Hmm. The Prophet's existence in a city has existential effects. And this is what we're saying about the Imam. It's nothing more than that. But how can we prove it? We have many hadith that prove it. I've just brought one over here very quickly. Although this hadith, so that's the adab part. I'm mentioning it together. The existential role of the Imam. If you want to put this number 5 all together, the hadith speaks very clearly about the Imam being it's a connection. Imamat is something that's it's something that stretches. It's not going to be cut off. This is a very beautiful hadith that, again, is a very reliable hadith from Sheikh Saduq, from his teacher Ibn Walid, from Abdullah ibn Ja'far al-Himyari, again, one of the top ashab, from Ahmad ibn Ishaq. So this is one of the hadiths. It's only got 4 people, and it's a very, very strong chain. And it's a very beautiful hadith. Ishaq himself, he says that, Ahmad, he comes to the Imam, and he tells him that the Imam says a part. I'm not going to translate and go into that. Then this part, the Imam tells them, فَإِنْ كَانَ هَذَا الْأَمْرَ أَمْرًا اِعْتَقَدْتُمُهُ. Basically, it was a time where the 11th Imam had this problem of the people being confused about what's going on.
Yeah.
Because the 11th Imam was a time where they were far away from the center of Shiaism at the time. Yeah. And also they were in the prison, right? The 10th, 11th Imam. Especially the 11th Imam. In fact, Al-Askari comes from the prison. Askar means army area. And that's where the Imam was kept, in Samarra. So the Imam tells Ahmad ibn Ishaq very beautifully that, okay, people are confused. But he says, I don't get why people are confused. So he says, فَإِنْ كَانَ هَذَا الْأَمْرَ أَمْرًا اَعْتَقَدْتُمُهُ وَدِنْتُمْ بِهِ إِلَىٰ وَقْتٍ ثُمَّ يَنْقَطِعْ فَلِلشَّكِ مَوْضِعْ. He says, okay, let's say your imama went on for a little while, then it cut off, you didn't have an imam. Then it went on for a little while, and it cut off again. Then you have the right to be confused just now. But he says, وَإِنْ كَانَ مُتَّصِلًا مَتَّصَلَتْ أُمُورُ اللَّهِ. If it's been connected the same way that Allah's affairs have been connected, فَمَا مَعْنَ هَذَا الشَّكِ. Why are you all confused?
In fact, very interestingly, Sheikh Imran, in his session, a few sessions ago, in fact, started with this question. Well, I don't know if he was referring to this hadith or not, that, look, does it make sense that it's gone on for 11 imams and then all of a sudden it cuts off? And then we said that, in fact, the question should be reversed. We would say, after the 12 would happen, where's the 13th,
exactly.
You know? Yeah.
So, فَمَا مَعْنَا هَذَا الشَّكِ. The imam is asking the question. Where is this coming from? So, this is one of the roles of the imam. The point that we're trying to discuss over here isn't the role. It's that, at the time of ghaiba, this doesn't rely, I'll use your word that you've coined, the identification of the imam doesn't affect this role at all. So, Laylatul Qadr, the realities of the Laylatul Qadr, the realities of the a'mal being shown to the imam, the realities that are very beautifully mentioned in the Quran, and I'm inclined to show a few verses, but it's fine, I'll resist.
Go for Joseph, one or two of them.
We have ayat that talk about shaheed. Very beautiful verse. I don't know if it's been discussed.
No, we haven't discussed it.
So we have a hadith that talk about shahada'i ala al-khalq. That وكذلك جعلناكم أمة سورة بقرة 143. Although this few times in the Quran. وكذلك جعلناكم أمة وسطا لتكونوا شهداء على الناس. You are شهداء on the people. والرسول عليكم شهيدا. The prophet has a special position of being a shaheed, being a witness. Now see, when the prophet is a shaheed of everyone, what does that even mean? Can the prophet actually physically, with just this physical body that we recognize, be a shaheed on so many things at one time?
Well, isn't it referring to a general shaheed, like you generally witness the people?
No, because we have ayat of the, some of them speak about the akhirat. وَجِئْنَا بِكَ عَلَى هَؤُلَاءِ شَهِيدًا. On the day of Qiyam, Allah, the Prophet, let me bring this verse as well. So in Nisa 41, فَكَيْفَ إِذَا جِئْنَا مِنْ كُلِّ أُمَّةٍ بِشَهِيدٍ وَجِئْنَا بِكَ عَلَى هَؤُلَاءِ شَهِيدًا. You will be the witness for all of these people. The day of Qiyamah, what good does a witness do except that he, in fact, we have that, the body
that,
parts.
He can say that I am coming to witness that this Ummah as a whole, I guided them. Doesn't necessarily mean...
That's a witness on himself. He's saying, I guided them means أنا شهيدٌ عليّ.
Mm-hmm.
But he's saying شهيدٌ عليكم. He's a witness upon them. He has to see if you, what does witness mean? Let's say, for example, you've seen a crime happening. You witness about that crime. You have to have seen the crime to be able to give witness, to bear witness about it.
Mm.
If the Prophet hasn't seen the Ummah and what they're doing, then how can he give witness about it?
Mm.
If he's a witness on himself, we have other verses that says, for example, the verse of Fitra says, right? أشهدهم على أنفسهم. That Allah said, witness yourselves. Bear witness on yourself. Now that's one way. بشهيدٌ عليكم.
Okay.
This mentioned a lot. There's many verses about shaheed. We, inshallah, we can look into it sometime. But this is a role of the Prophet in Imams.
Mm.
And there's other verses. قُلْ يَعْمَلُوا فَسَيَرَ اللَّهُ عَمَلَكُمْ. That Surah Tawbah. I don't know if this has been mentioned in this verse.
No, we haven't mentioned it.
This is all among the different... some people may make it seem like the Quran only talks about Allah. And may seem that it's centered around Allah. And we are the ones that are centering things around other than Allah. These verses are very much centered around the the messengers and awliya of Allah,
yeah,
which are directly related to Allah. Mm. There's no separating these two. Yeah.
And I guess being the terminology says God-centric means that if Allah gives importance to these people, then we, because of Allah's importance, the importance given by Allah to them, we also give them importance.
And essentially Allah gives them importance to lead back to Him.
Yeah.
We are standing firmly on the ground that the and forget me and you, the A'imma stood firmly and said that the base of religion is Tawheed. Tawheed is the reality of religion. Now, there's anyone who wants to twist that in the middle of Imam's course, we have to mention this again and again. Anyone who wants to twist that is ghulu. If you're saying that, look, Tawheed isn't important, we have to just look at these people. The Imams themselves told us of when the Imams spoke about ghulu, this is what they were speaking about. Yusaghiruna azamat Allah, that was discussed over here. This is what it means, right? That you bring down Allah. To bring the Imams up, you bring down Allah. The Imam says, no, don't do that. Keep Allah in His lofty position that doesn't even have an end. And recognize that Allah has given us so much.
Yeah.
But this is very
is recognizing the lofty position of the Imams without needing to bring them at par with Allah or bringing Allah down.
Yeah, because it's directly with it's through Allah that they have anything.
Yeah.
That look at the Imams when they called out for munajat. Now sometimes these munajat are brought out. Look, the Imams themselves were like this. Yes, this is what we have to do. When we say that Imam is a part of religion, we're not trying to come and say that put aside munajat Sha'baniya, put aside Abu Hamza Thumali, put aside Dua Arafah. That's not the reality. The Imams taught us this is the way. But if you look at Dua Arafah itself, in the end of Dua Arafah, it says that, now, to such hadith would take me slightly longer, في هذه العشية, if I'm able to find it, inshallah, بنبيك. At the end, it says that I'm asking you through, on this evening, through the Prophet. Alhamdulillah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, it's near the end. وَعَطِنِي فِي هَذِهِ الْعَشِيَّةِ أَفْضَلَ مَا أَعْطَيْتَ وَأَنَالْتَ أَحْدَ مِنْ عِبَادِكَ مِنْ نِعْمَةٍ. Sorry, this is not the one. The next one. It's in the same paragraph. There's another في هذه العشية. اللهم إنا نتوجه إليك في هذه العشية التي شرفتها وعظمتها بمحمد النبيك. We turn towards you on this. This is the end of the Arafah, on the plains of Arafah. You're calling out everything. You say, I'm nothing, أنا الفقير, all the different. And you say that I'm turning towards you بمحمد. There's nothing. These are together. Allah is the final goal. is the ones that the imams are trying to pull us towards. Anyway, this is a side point. Let's come back to our discussion. The imams, what we're trying to say, the imams had an essential part when it came to the existential factor in ghibah.
And Sheikh Baqir explained that in the whole system of creation, in that linear sense, the imams fit in the linear causation. So Allah is a real doer of everything. But the imams and the Prophet and the awliya of Allah are sort of in that chain where through them Allah does what He does, basically.
And this is the responsibility that the imam takes up at this time. Mm-hmm. There's one final point I want to mention, that after mentioning these five, and now we've explained that, look, the guidance, the tarbiyah, put aside the government for now, the completion of the argument and complete the argument, and being the channel of Allah for the existential matters, wasitatul faith, all of these happen in the form of ghibah. As you mentioned, certain aspects of them may not happen in the way that we want and is the ideal way in Allah's eyes, but that's for us to come up. Yeah. That's the point of ghibah. And that's why we painted the picture in that way. The last point that I want to mention is that having an imam that's ghaib, apart from him doing his responsibilities as imam completely, there's other effects of it as well. There's other benefits that we get out of this.
For example?
One of them, for example, is hope. You see the Shias, and these are Orientalists that have come and mentioned this. Orientalists means people who study Islam as an Eastern religion. I mean, they from an outside, external perspective, they come and study Islam. They come and say that this sect has something specific. And what's that? Is this energy and this nature of being waiting and this nature of expecting something. You know, the way sometimes I get surprised when you see Friday, I mean, I'm talking about Iran, is our weekend, right? Now, Thursdays, even many people work. I mean, it's like a Saturday in other parts of the world. Friday is the weekend, okay? And that one weekend that you get to sleep in, there's Doinut Ba'an that weekend. You just feel like, okay, that one day that you get to sleep. And then you look at the mosques. They're and full. How they're packed with people crying and we're talking about waiting Nubba, at 6 a.m.
6 a.m. straight 6 after Tulu.
Yeah. Some places they have it at 11, that's still okay. Mm. 6 a.m. I mean, what's causing that? If you had a religion where there were teachings. And there were teachings. Mm. There's no spirit of working towards something.
Yeah.
And in fact, that working towards something is what was spoken about yesterday. That's the progress of society that will lead to the goal that Allah has for us in the socio-political sphere, in the personal sphere, all the different spheres that we have. So this is a very important point of having an imam, even if he's ghaib.
I guess if somebody wants to sort of weaken the faith that the Shias have, one of the best places then would be to weaken the belief in Mahdawiyah, because that is what is giving energy. So questioning this Mahdawiyah, although we saw that it's so clear across, we have allusions in the Quran, but in the Hadith from the Prophet, you know, very clearly that we have an imam. We have a lot of Ahl Sunnah scholars who actually believe that an imam is born already. Right? Even that we discussed with Sheikh Imran. So, I mean, it's such a core concept in Islam. So it's very strange that we would question this. And I guess this, because it's such an essential aspect in our faith that gives us energy, then that would
if
be a good point.
If ever there were enemies, they would definitely weaken that. That's the Achilles heel, I mean, if you want to get that. So this is really important when it comes to understanding. There's a hadith that I've mentioned over here as well that I've brought in. There's one really beautiful hadith. Let me just read this one and then we can move ahead, inshallah. So the hadith is again from, I mention this again and again, from Sheikh Saduq, from his teacher Ibn Walid. أَقْرَبُ مَا يَكُونُ الْعَبْدِ إِلَى اللَّهِ وَأَرْضَى مَا يَكُونُ عَنْهُ. The best, I don't know if this hadith has come up in this series, this needs to be put up over here. Can we put it somewhere? The closest that a servant, and this is not ghulu, this is from Ibn Walid, from Sheikh Saduq. And it's from Sa'ad, and the rest of the chain you can look into as well. I mean, there's some stars shining out over here in this chain. Ibn Mahbub is Ashabul Ijma, Himyari, Ahmad ibn Muhammad, these are stars shining out, right? Aqabumay, the closest that a servant is to Allah, and the most pleased situation that Allah has from a person, إِذَا افْتَقَدُوا حُجَّةَ اللَّهِ, is when they lose their حُجَّة. فَلَمْ يَظْهَرْ لَهُمْ, he's not seen for them. See the words match again. وَحُجِّبَ عَنْهُمْ, he's curtained from them. They can't recognize and identify him. فَلَمْ يَعْلَمُوا بِمَكَانِهِ, they don't know where he is. وَهُمْ فِي ذَلِكَ يَعْلَمُونَ أَنَّهُ لَا تَبْطُلُ حُجَّجُ اللَّهِ وَلَا بَيِّنَاتِهِ. ولا بيناته, sorry. That they know that Allah is not going to leave his argument incomplete, and they know that Allah has an appointed figure for them and an imam for them. فَلْيَتَوَقَّعُوا الْفَرَجِ. This has to be written. فَلْيَتَوَقَّعُوا الْفَرَجِ صَبَاحًا وَمَسَاءً. These are beautiful hadith, that they should remember and expect this awakening, this appearance of the imam, صَبَاحًا وَمَسَاءً, in the morning and the evenings. And there's more, inshallah, we can look into this hadith later. But look at this hope on a daily basis, twice a day. We, you know, some of us have this tradition, alhamdulillah, of remembering the imam on a daily basis. It's not something that we just made it up. This is the hadith, sabahan wa masa'an, in the morning, in the evening. It's and the hadith says the closest that a person comes to Allah is in this state. So even though we have a test, there's also a chance for us, and this creates a lot of hope and a lot of movement.
So there's a question I've been wanting to ask, but then you sort of made it redundant. And that is that, okay, the people in the past, and we mentioned with Sheikh Kazim that, you know, the whole reason ghaybat happened is because the people weren't ready for it. But today I feel I'm ready. If my imam comes, I'll help him out. So why should I suffer the consequences of what other people have done? But then you've mentioned so many benefits of ghaybah that I feel like, okay, I'm in a good situation right now. I'm a bit falling onto that other extreme.
So the answer to this question, it's a valid question that we should have, right? I mean, we should. In fact, when you say فَلْيَتَوَقَّعُوا, you know, wait for the imam, be there, expect him, want him, call out to him. Naturally, you should feel that, okay, I'm calling out, I'm doing my bit. What did I do wrong? Mm. It's like, you know, for example, the example that sometimes is given, that, you know, for example, if, let's say you're in an accident, but you didn't do anything wrong and the car from behind you comes and hits you. That's not fair. That's unjust. Yeah. Why should the imam situation be the same as that? Mm. That's a question that comes up. One point to start with over here that we often ignore, and this is for all of us, and we need to really pay attention to this point, inshallah, is that, are we really ready? That's a lot of the times the problem lies over there. That I make claim I was ready. I remember growing up hearing, be ready for the imam, be ready for the imam. And I used to really feel that we are ready for the imam. I mean, when you listen to the masaib, if I was there, I'd have done it. I would have stood up. Oh, how silly were the people. You know, you hear, for example, I don't know, Bibi Fatima's masaib, you feel if I was there, I would have protected. But when you look in, and these are very beautiful ayat of the Quran over here as well, there's many verses on this, but I'll just pick one here. Surah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam speaks about how, what's better. So Surah Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, verse 20 and 21. وَيَقُولُ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَوْلَا نُزِلَتْ سُورَةً. The people, the believers, says, I wish a surah was sent down, guidance was sent down to show what to do. فَإِذَا أُنزِلَتْ سُورَةٌ مُحْكَمَةٌ. A surah is sent down, clear. وَذُكِرَ فِيهَا الْقِتَالِ. It's mentioned, okay, you guys have to go for war. Here surah means a message, an instruction. رَأَيْتَ الَّذِينَ فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ. Those people now, that their hearts had the sickness, their minds, they couldn't see it. It's inside them, deep inside them. يَنْظُرُونَ إِلَيْكَ نَظَرَ الْمَغْشِيَّ عَلَيْهِ مِنَ الْمَوْتِ. They have the face of a person that death has overtaken them. Mm. Allah says, فَأُولَى لَهُمْ طَاعَةٌ وَقَوْلٌ مَعْرُوفٌ. What you need to do is you focus on your obedience. Mm. This shows us the criteria. Again, we have many verses like this. The story of Talut and Jalut is the same. Mm. You can refer to it, inshallah. Yeah. Talut and Jalut, they claimed, send us a prophet. When they sent a prophet, he said, don't drink water from this river.
Then it's a king.
They couldn't. Yeah. Said as the king, sorry, my bad, a ruler to go and fight with, a Malika.
Yeah.
Send us a Malik. The Malik told them, don't drink from this river. And they
drank. I guess when the time comes, the real time comes, then that's when you see a person's true, true face.
But and the way to
fight. We shouldn't be overconfident and think that, oh, I'm ready. Right.
The way to introspect in this is to look at our obedience on a daily basis. When it comes to the very small things in life where Allah has put his foot down, Allah has given us a message, right? Allah said, for example, when it comes to your children, you're not allowed to get angry. It's very easy to get angry at children, right? Between ourselves, if you get angry, especially if it's the wrong person, you bear the consequences of the anger. But children can't do anything.
Yeah. We're very easy on
we get angry at them. with sometimes our family at home, sometimes when it comes to our employees at work, sometimes when it comes to the worker at home, whatever it may be, very easy to get angry. When it comes to shahwa, you know, for example, sometimes, now obviously the audience are very different, but there's a thing that everyone's challenged with. You know, sometimes if everyone's around, you won't look. But for example, when you're behind your mobile, when you're on your own, nobody's watching. What stuff are you watching? What are you listening to? These are the preparations. We shouldn't, some people, I think this idea was common at the time, you know, learn to swing around a sword and carry a shield, which is a good thing we have in our hadith. Yeah. But that's not the preparation the Imam wants. The main preparation the Imam wants is,
in fact, that even at that time when ourselves. The people who could swing a sword weren't going to the
Imam. They'd
swing
it in the wrong way. They'd be more damaging at times. So this is something we have to first turn in and really say, are we really ready?
Yeah.
And a lot of the times the issue lies right over here. And often it hurts to even understand that we are a part of the cause of the Imam not coming. Now, that's one point to keep in mind. Let's say somebody is really, you have the best, whatever you want to give him the title. This guy that everyone's like, look, this guy, you know, he's not even a type that would even think about
anyone's in the three thinking three about, three, thinking about the guna.
Exactly. Yeah. So this kind of guy, what did he do wrong? The answer is twofold. Two sections to this answer. One section is that, look, when it comes to what did he do wrong, injustice would be Allah doing an oppression upon him. There's something that he deserves and Allah is not giving him. But what is that? What we're saying that he's not getting when you looked at the roles of the Imam is the government of the Imam.
Yeah.
Salman Farsi, Abu Dhar, Miqdad, Zurara, Muhammad ibn Muslim, come down, Bazanti ibn Abi Nasr, Bazanti, you know, all the way down, all the Ashab, even go down to Ahmad ibn Ishaq. Right? What did they do wrong as well? Look, the Imams didn't have that power because it needs everyone. In fact, it's a bit of, the question has a problem, right? It's like, I'm trying, why doesn't everyone? Well, everyone isn't in your hands. Okay. Forget you, the Imam wants it. Isn't it injustice on the Imam himself? So we realize here, there's not injustice. And in reality, not setting up a government and not having haq everywhere, even though we'd love it, isn't a right that I have or something that's injustice. But still, this answer isn't very satisfying. The better answer is that, and this is something that we want to end with, inshallah, over here, I won't go on after this, is that, I'll end with a quote from Sheikh Saduq again in his book. When I saw this quote, it's just too beautiful to not read it out. فَحَالُ الْعَارِفِينَ Now, somebody said this, the words of Ghali, these are the words of Sheikh Saduq. فَحَالُ الْعَارِفِينَ فِي وَقْتِنَا هَذَا بِصَاحِبِ زَمَانِنَا الغائب حال يعقوب في معرفتي بيوسف. He says the people that really are the type that connect with the Imam, their connection with the 12th Imam today is like the connection of Yusuf, Yaqub. Prophet Yaqub knew, right? In the different verses. And يتفتو تذكر يوسف, they say, why do you keep him? لا تيأسوا من روح الله اذهبوا فتجسسوا من فتحسسوا من يوسف. Go find out about him, right? Yaqub knew. And even at the start when they brought the shirt, he says to them, right, that بَلْ سَوَّلَتْ لَكُمْ أَنفُسُكُمْ أَمْرًا, that you've been tricked, this is not reality, right? So he knew. The people that are arifin, that really understand, and arifan بِحَقِّ, we have in our hadith, right, that they have that special connection with the Imam, these people, their connection with the Imam is like Yaqub. فِي مَعْرِفَتِهِ, they know him, they know where he is, and they have connection with him. وَحَالُ الْجَاهِلِينَ بِهِ.
So, sorry, they don't know where he is exactly, but they have that heart connection with him. Is that what you mean?
So this is a quote from Sheikh Saduq. If you want to take this, I guess if you want to look at the example completely, they have the connection, but they don't know where he is necessarily.
Yeah.
Certain, if we look further, they actually are in touch with the Imam even physically. As in, they actually physically see the Imam and meet the Imam. But the reality is the important point is the reality of being in touch with the Imam. Whether the physical part is there or no, that's a different point.
The purpose and the goal is not to have a physical meeting with the Imam. Exactly. It's that relationship should be there. The guidance should be coming to us.
Yeah. And the way to...
And our duty towards him should also be fulfilled.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where the Arifin part comes in. Yeah. That if a person actually is acting upon what they're doing, they create such a connection with the Imam that it's as if there's no ghiba. That's why some of the ulama call this a personal dhuhr, if you want to call it. A specific personal dhuhr to me. Although it doesn't have all the qualities of the...
Of course,
you're still in pain.
Yeah.
We're still bleeding. Shia is bleeding from the ghaiba. But at least there's no injustice. That, Allah, I tried to reach out to your guide, but I can't. No, my guide is there. If you work towards him, you will get to him.
And I guess that sort of that personal zuhur can happen in different forms, right? It doesn't necessarily also have to be a physical meeting.
Yes. So yeah. Like you mentioned,
like the reality. Sheikh Saduq, for example, saw Imam in the dream. For him, that was sort of like his meeting. Imam. Yeah.
And a lot of the ulama, there's a good point to mention over here as well. The ulama have been, the ahadith teach us not to mention that they met the imam. The reason behind this was that if it becomes a thing, everyone just starts saying, oh, I met the imam, it just becomes confusion.
Yeah.
You know, tomorrow I say, I met the imam, he told me this.
There's no way to check it.
There's no way to confirm it. That's why the ulama, many of them met the imam and they carried this meeting with them to their graves and nobody found out.
Yeah. And that's why I also said that for Sheikh Saduq, it's not a hujjah on us.
Correct.
That he said he saw the imam, okay, that's for you to know. We're going to take the book
and the beauty of the study of the book. Yeah. In fact, there's one story I just mentioned briefly over here. There's a very beautiful story of Sheikh Muhammad Taqi Amuli,
mm-hmm.
who is a very specific, a special personality, because on one side, he's a faqih that the fuqaha of today accept and look up to very much, mm-hmm. and his books are very well accepted. On the other side, he's also a person that was very progressed in his spirituality. And he was known as a teacher of spirituality. In fact, Alama Tabatabai would sometimes refer certain people that seek guidance from him to Sheikh Muhammad Taqi Amuli.
Mm-hmm.
He says, once I got to meet the imam. Now, how it's narrated is even got a story. It's not like he came and said on the minbar.
Mm-hmm.
But it came out later and people figured out he's passed away. And one of the questions that he asked the imam, according to what's been narrated, none of these are 100%. Don't look for 100% stories in this. The imams have kept it in a way that you don't find it. Now, the point is in this story. And he asked the imam one question, that imam, we're doing this fiqh like this, this istinbat like this. You know, we're going through all the proofs one by one, looking at the change of narration, looking at the against versus the contradictory versus the contradictory hadith, putting it all together, piling it up, and taking out a fatwa. Really, do we have to do things like this? And the imam said, at the time of ghibah, this is what I want.
Hmm.
The imams have said, this is the way of guidance. Because if it was to be, the imam came in Aitla Muhammad Taqi Amuli and told him, look, namaz, 4 rakat like this, 3 rakat like this, wudu like this, you know, then tomorrow I would also claim that I'm here for them. It would mess up the whole systems that the imams laid. The imams strived so much to lay the system of guidance so through the ulama.
Prove, if we come with a fatwa, you have a proof for this is how it is. This is academic backup, yeah. Basically.
And the dreams have no, even though for himself, he's sure. But he wouldn't come out and say it.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't give the fatwa because that's not a thing that we can base it on.
Yeah.
So the point I was mentioning over here was that we have through a person's actions. So if me and you and all of us really do correct ourselves and really do strive, then we will definitely be, it's not even a chance, we will definitely be in touch with Imam if we'd really achieve Fahalul Arifin, as the Sheikh Saduq mentions. If we try, we will achieve that level. I'll just end with one story. I'm saying this again. I've not gone into stories in this session. I have a few written over here, and there's way more that you can find. There's many books. Because each one of these stories, there's no way to, or I can't think of a way to prove them and say this 100%. Although some of them really you doubt. Like for Sheikh Mufid getting letters, Sheikh Mufid, again, he was strict. 413, Sheikh Mufid passed away. He's early. He's strict on his hadith. And he's mentioned letters. Anyway, this one story we'll finish with. It's a very beautiful story that during the revolution in Iran, there was a day right near the end, on the last day, that they set up martial law, that people can't leave their houses. And Imam Khomeini gave a statement that everyone leave their houses and come out on the streets.
Hmm.
And now this has been narrated from Ayatollah Khazali and Ayatollah Qureshi. Both relatively accepted people. I mean, they're not people that would lie in this way. Ayatollah Khazali passed away. Ayatollah Khoreishi is alive. And they say that Ayatollah Taleqani, one of the scholars at that time, was close to Imam Khomeini, very close. He comes and says, look, all of this is correct, but this today, these people are at the end of things. They're just going to shoot like crazy. We're just going to lose everyone. And the narration, the report says that they had a 30-minute phone call. When Imam Khomeini was doing his responsibility as an alim, he told him, look, this reason, this reason, this reason, this reason. But Ayatollah Taleqani was very strong on the fact that we'd lose too many people. Too much blood would be spilt. And one of the reports say, these two people say, that Imam Khomeini told him one sentence at the end. Again, Imam Khomeini within the laws, because he explained things properly. And at the end, even he didn't say anything. He said on the phone that, what if this was an instruction from our 12th Imam? And the people that were with Ayatollah Taleqani, if I'm not mistaken, it was his son, reports that he dropped the phone and he put his head down And he'd realized. Although, like I'm saying, can we say that this was definitely an instruction from the Imam that the people have to go out on the street? We can't affirm that. But would Imam Khomeini make up a lie like that for no reason? Would Ayatollah Taliqani? These add together.
Knowing the these personalities, their taqwa, exactly. their ilm, their ma'rifah, obviously these lies are
but
not.
But I left this all for the end, and I didn't go into these to explain that the real point that we have is the points above. Yeah. If ever a story is mentioned, don't say, nah, this is all lies. No, don't say that. But there's no need also to now accept this as the definite truth. And we have, but the point so before this establish.
We don't base all our actions on stories. We base our actions on the facts. These stories come and the least they give us motivation, they give us hope, and they're an inspiration for
and
us.
It's very likely many.
It's very likely that many of these are correct as well. And inshallah, we can hope that such things also happen for us. Inshallah, that we can have not the necessarily the physical meeting, but that real spiritual connection with the Imam. Inshallah. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh, for the interesting discussion. Inshallah, we'll be moving to more discussions on Imam Mahdi and Ghaiba in the coming session. So, looking forward to those. Until then, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.